I did have the benefit of seeing the slides in advance while they were being developed over the last couple of months. I worked alongside of Jesse and Ann in preparing their notes, since I'm familiar with the club itself here. However, I don't have the subject matter expertise that either of them would, so the Q&A session may need to be quite short. Given the hour, I suspect we need to be short anyway. I do want to convey their apologies. This has been a 2.5-month process that both Ann Hemstrand, our Senior Director of International Activities at the SOA, as well as Jesse Lee, our lead actor in China, in Beijing, have been very excited about, very engaged in. Jesse arranged for North America travel for this year to coincide with this event so that she could be here. She'd been in the Chicago headquarters the last week or so and was scheduled to travel up today. And as Paul mentioned, they were scheduled to be here at 1 something this afternoon. Weather delays on both ends and then mechanical problems on the plane caused this to not happen the way that we hoped. However, as the saying goes, when life deals you lemons, you make lemonade. And so we've had an opportunity to reverse the order of the meal and presentation tonight. Maybe that'll catch on, maybe it won't. But I will try to keep this quite brief. I'm going to be Ann. August is going to be Jesse. And I should mention a few additional comments about August's involvement as well. So my involvement comes with my role as Canadian staff fellow for the SOA. Just as of today, late this afternoon, it was made more public as well. I'm also going to be the liaison for the SOA to its International Section Council. So I've got some history there. I've previously been as a volunteer with the International Section Chair. August is highly involved in international activities. Those of you who know him well would already know that, but those who don't, I just want you to be assured that there's value in having August be the presenter as Jesse, because it's on the China regulatory environment. August has been a regulator both in Canada and in China. He's on our International Committee of the Society of Actuaries. He's also on the SOA board. So, very distinguished speaker. So I'm going to keep it brief and leave it to August to get into any depth. Just a couple of comments on the membership growth for the Society of Actuaries. You'll see that growth in Asia is nearly 7% year over year in the most recently measured time frame. The new candidates in for the SOA's exam system largely are a significant amount are coming from China, Malaysia, Singapore, in the Pacific, rest of the Pacific Rim region. There is a new 5-year strategic plan that the Society of Actuaries has, and I'm just going to point to a few. I know this print is small, but there are a few global initiatives that are new to the strategic plan. So the first point here, the SOA's credentials are prestigious, relevant, and globally recognized. That's a strategic objective. Providing valued services to global stakeholders tailored by region and based on well-communicated principles. So the Society of Actuaries is really targeting becoming relevant. Obviously, we've been a strong partner to the CIA in Canada for many years, but now with the CAA in China and elsewhere globally, trying to make sure that we tailor the SOA education and research services by region. This number 6-year support actuaries in obtaining relevant global perspectives and knowledge. So again, taking a global approach to the preparation of actuaries for their roles in the profession. And then number 11 over here, effective relationships with other organizations to accomplish mutually beneficial stakeholder objectives. That's been an objective here in Canada, and we're working closely with the CIA. But again, in the Pacific Rim, with the local regulators, sorry, local actuarial associations, the SOA is trying to come alongside, help fill gaps,
help devote resources to education and research needs of those partner organizations. If you go on the SOA website, there is a neat tool called SOA Explore. Has anybody actually toyed with that tool, SOA Explore? It shows you, it's kind of like a Google map, and it shows you the concentration of SOA members in any region that you click on a map. I say that because this reminds me of it. It's not actually taken from SOA Explore. This is to show the kind of the globalization of members in China and Greater Asia. If you get a chance, just as a side note, that SOA Explore tool, it's if you're interested in finding out you know, the concentration of actuaries in a certain part of Toronto, you can see there's 92 members in this neighborhood. It's really pretty cool. And it's without violating any privacy, it doesn't give you names and locations and addresses. It's not like you can stalk other actuaries with it, but it does give you numbers, which is kind of interesting. The International Committee was formed a few years ago. I was actually on the International Committee as an at-large member for a year or so in its early stages back about 4 or 5 years ago. It has expanded, and one of the messages to take away tonight is that SOA has become very devoted to reaching out to China and Greater Asia by resourcing not only with educational tools, but placing staff members. So Jesse is located in Beijing. She has a team working with her in Beijing. We have Weiling Yang, that's a staff member in Hong Kong. And so we're trying to ensure that there's not just a verbal commitment to China and Greater Asia, but an actual physical commitment as well. Within the International Committee's structure, there are subcommittees for China, Greater Asia, Latin America. When we transition to have Jesse, i.e. August, speak, he may have a few comments on this, but he's been involved directly with these committees. Some of the activities you see here that the SOA staff has been involved in China, developing a memorandum of understanding, MOUs, a memorandum of understanding to work together with the China Actuarial Association Board, doing joint research seminars, symposia, university visits. Oops, I guess I should have. Okay. And then exchange of training, work in another exchange program in Beijing and Shanghai. I'll also note that there are some other activities that are outside of. Well, when I talk about, when we get to part about Greater Asia, I've got some additional personal insights. But one key activity is networking events, just like this. Maybe not as oriented toward CPD type credits, but just getting to know others, because the profession is developing. It's not as mature as the profession here. And so you've got a lot of people who are relatively new to the profession, and having networking opportunities is a key activity there. So, Greater Asia, again, this is kind of a laundry list of some activities, but they're important activities. So, suppose you have Hong Kong, Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, the Asian Actuarial Conference. I believe this was, it was held in July, I think, and it's, I believe this is the second or third year they've had it. And then some joint regional seminars, and actually, a shameless plug for the International Section Council. Within the SOA, many of the volunteer activities are organized by practice area. And so the sections, practice sections like the investment section, the joint risk management section, which is not just an SOA committee, or an SOA section, but the health section, et cetera. Practice areas typically develop seminars for North America, but the International Section Council covers all practice areas, and so the seminars that are developed for Greater Asia often are done by volunteers within the International Section. So those of you who have expertise
that you'd like to share outside of Canada, perhaps in some of these regional seminars, the international section is a good place to do that. And so speak to me afterward or send me an email. I've got contact information I can provide, as I'll be working more and more directly with the International Section Council as well. Other international activities, staying in touch with associations, relationships with and assistance other with, associations, targeted engagements with other international organizations like the CIA, like the IFOA, and others, and then inviting VIP guests and providing sponsorships to bring people from Greater Asia to North America for certain conferences and educational opportunities. Supporting the international section and ambassadors is another method that we use to create opportunities for networking and educational events locally in various countries and cities in Greater Asia. And then supports international activities for educational future exam centers worldwide. Again, the exam centers worldwide, if you look at where exams are being written, there's an explosive growth in China, Malaysia, Singapore, countries in the Pacific Rim. And then maintain a focus on increasingly global scope of research. And again, often principles that are learned here in North America can are transferable elsewhere. Not always, but where there are opportunities to transfer experience and knowledge and gain benefit more than just locally, we look for opportunities to do that. And sometimes sponsor research that's not simply it's not simply a reapplication of something developed here, but unique to areas in Greater Asia. And so that, I believe, I know I sped through it, that's all I can say is and. I'm going to turn it over to August and solicit any comments on that presentation, as well as to go through a little bit more deep dive with the China regulatory environment.
Okay, thank you, Ben. So you all know that I'm not Jesse Lee, because I don't have a pretty face like August Chow. I guess some of you might know me. In fact, I have been around almost as long as Paul. I want to say a few things about the other slide. Can I go back? Well, before I go to the slide, I want to say something about, because we're in Toronto, right, Canada. We just want to let everybody know that SOA is very also focused on Canada. So we just don't think that we spend all the time and money in international market. So actually, you know, right now in the SOA board, there are about 24 members now. It's shrinking, but because we want to be more effective. And of the 24 members, 5 of them are with FCIA title. So you know, Canada, I think we are well represented, you know, in the SOA board. So just want to make sure that before we jump into Asia and international, just want to ensure everybody that, you know, SOA does, you know, pay a lot of attention to Canada. In fact, there's ongoing discussion about, you know, how SOA can be a more effective partnership with CIA on education, on, you know, a lot of things. So anyway, but if you have any questions, want to ask about relationship between SOA and CIA, we have our president-elect, Mike Lombardi, who can answer any questions that you want to raise.
We also have another honored guest here, Mike is both the SOA president-elect as well as a former CIA president. We also have another former CIA president to our right, Dave Peltier, who won the $100 Amazon gift certificate earlier. And we have a CIA board member, Mark Tardif, right beside Dave there. And do we have any other CIA reps? Former board member for the CIA, Mercy Yin, and any other CIA reps here, former reps. Okay,
So, especially like Ben, actually, this is the latest SOA, the official statement. So, actually, the SOA for spent, I would say, probably about 2 or 3 years to update the vision statements and all this. So, it's posted on the SOA website. So, I do encourage every one of you to go into it, because there's some explanations about every one of those. You know, I do encourage everybody to spend some time to do that. I just want to say something about some of you might be know that if you've been around for years, SOA used to have something called the Greater China Region, okay, many years ago. But because the market in China is growing so much, so 2 years ago, the SOA decided to have a China committee on its own. Okay, so now there's about 10 members in the China committee, and they're all based in mainland China. And then the rest of Asia becomes the Greater Asia Committee. So actually we spend a lot of time working, we have identified 6 countries, to be part of the Greater Asia Committee, and of course we have a Latin American Committee as well. It's more like a green field, but we think that there's a lot of potential on the road. Something I want to talk a little bit about is the education, okay, because education is one of the mandate of SOA. You may know that in Taiwan and in Hong Kong, we have actually developed a specific module, okay, for those two places. Okay, I want to make sure political is not country. Okay? I just want to say it's territorial region, okay, area. That for Taiwan, there's a specific module to cover the taxation and the regulations, and Hong Kong is also coming up as well. Okay, so as a result of that, actually the SOA will be embarking a study, okay, and the study is how can we make the education track more user-friendly to international students, okay, because we have heard that, people say in China, they say, well, why do I have to study ERISA? You know, why do I have to look at the Internal Revenue Code, which is meaningless to me? So actually, the SOA will be embarking at least one and a half year study to see how can we enrich the exams, make it better for international students, because we do call SOA as an international association. So how can we, from education point of view, how can we make it better? Okay. So anyway, I want to move to the China. Slide. I don't have the benefit like Ben. He has able to look at the slide 1 or 2 days ahead of time. I do have the advanced reading of the slide, but only like 15 minutes. So my knowledge about the slide will be probably just as equal as yours. So, and I will try to think about Jesse Lee what she want to talk about. So I do apologize and. My comfort will not be as extensive as her. Some of you noticed that I did work in China for a number of years in Shanghai and in Beijing, but now since I'm retired now, so I have not kept myself up to date. So I won't rely on the slides or any developments.
Just in fairness, the slides themselves are in English, but as soon as I looked at the speaker notes, I knew it wasn't me that would deliver them, because the speaker notes were in Chinese.
And they are written in simplified Chinese, not the traditional Chinese. Okay, so first of all, actually the slide is covered in two parts. The first part is like an overview of the China insurance market. Okay, and then the second part of the slide is to talk about the some of the current developments. Okay, so for the first few slides is more on the historical developments of China. Okay, so I apologize again because the one at the back probably cannot see it very well, but I think it started in 1988. That is the Okay, for the, you know, the regulator in China is called CIRC, right? The China Insurance Regulatory Commission. But before the CIRC established, they were just part of the PICC, the People Insurance Company of China, one of those departments, okay? And so that was talked about back in 1988. So again, it's a history of the insurance market. So I think the one that, to me, when I look at this slide 15 minutes ago, I thought the one that caught my eyes was like in 1998. Okay, that was almost like 30 years ago. Okay, that's the establishment of the CIRC. Okay, so they have a pretty young history. All right, and then the next milestone is 2001. That's when China entered into the World Trade, the WTO, the World Trade Organization. And that's really China opened up the insurance market. Okay, so we probably know that AIA was probably the first foreign company entered in China, but as a branch operation, okay? But since the 2001, when China entered the WTO, all the foreign companies, when they entered in China, they have to be a joint venture. Okay, so AIA still have the benefit of the only foreign company with a branch operation in China. So much advertising for that company. Okay, and what's the... we will talk about some of the more recent years' development. Actually, some of you might already heard about the CROSS. You know, CROSS is really equivalent to the Solvency II in Europe. What's the Canadian?
LICAT.
Thank you. DCAT, right? LICAT. Okay, all right. Okay, all right. I'm forgetting those words now. But anyway, so I must have a good time right after I retire. I remember that when I first came back from Shanghai 2 years ago, I did give a 1 hour talk about CROSS, but now don't ask me about the details about CROSS. I will rely on the slide when Jesse did talk about CROSS here. Okay. All right, so anyway, it gives you a, you can see that the history of the Chinese insurance market is, it's not that long, it's 30, 40 years ago. Okay. All right, this is a graph just to show the growth of premium income. The dark line is life, okay, it's life premium, and the light blue is the non-life premium. So actually you can see that the non-life premium is catching up, okay, it's still not as high as the life premiums, okay. In fact, but if you look at the compound growth for the last 15 years, life has 23% compound growth, long life has 19. But if you sort of look at the last few years, actually the long life has more growth here. In fact, I think when I was in China working there, we heard about this government, they have an annual release about what's going up. You know, long life, agriculture is a very important sector of market, so.
Yeah, I should mention here as well, many of you may be familiar with this, but when the SOA made a strategic decision several years ago to develop a non-life or P&C insurance track, general insurance track, it was driven by the desire to be able to serve countries like China and elsewhere where the P&C component is held and regulated by the same regulator and the market demands the participation of insurance companies both in life and non-life. So that was a strategic decision that was linked to a more global mindset on behalf of the SOA.
Thank you, Ben, for the good comments. Okay. By the way, because we are not very prepared for the talk, so if you have any questions, feel free just to jump in and raise your hand and we'll try to answer the question. You don't have to hold the questions until the end of the presentation, all right? Okay, again, this is a more global, looking at the whole insurance market globally, okay, we have two sectors, the one which we call as advanced market, okay, so obviously you know, Canada, US, and UK, a few countries in Europe there. And then there's this emerging market, so obviously China is part of that. So, you know, so when we look at China, when we look at the premium on its own, because China is such a big country, on a dollar amount, the premium amount is very huge. But if you look at the insurance as a percentage of the GDP per capita, you know, China still has a long way to go. Okay. But if you look at the, you know, I don't have the well, I guess the previous slide, the insurance premium there. Right? So the total life premium is what? Almost 2,000 billion. This is in renminbi, CNB. So it's pretty huge, okay? But as a per capita, it's not a big number. I think this is something to remember, and this is still, if you look at the China, you know, the geographic, most of the increase is in the coastal areas, in Shanghai, Beijing, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, those are the big countries. But then when you move inland, you know, what we call a second tier, third tier city, there's still a lot of potential growth. All right, so again, this is a look at the market share by company, all right? So basically, I think when I first look at this, so everything is 100%, okay, by the year. But then if you look at the top, which is the percentage of insurance company every year, which are called foreign joint venture, you will notice that the blue, the yellow, pretty much stable, you know, it's not growing at all. Maybe 10% at most, or maybe even less than 10%. So the big blue one, what we call this is the big three, you know, the China Life, Ping An, and CPIC, Zhongbao, Taibao, and Ping An, the three companies, okay? China Life, the headquarters is in Beijing, Ping An is in Shenzhen, and CPIC is also, I believe, in Shanghai. Okay, so you can see that those three companies, back in 10 years ago, they dominated 8% of the market. But you can see that their ownership, the percentage is shrinking. Okay, and what's taking place is the second tier. Okay, the second tier company is PICC, NCL, New China Life. Okay, that's the full name. And Taikon and Taiping. Okay, so those are the second tier. And then the other is the other domestic company. So you know what to get out from this slide is that, you know, the domestic companies are still taking the lion's share of the market. Okay, but the top three companies are shrinking, replaced by the second tier company. And the foreign ownership percentage is pretty much stable. The dark blue is show you the number of domestic companies in China. You can see that it's still growing. Okay, but when you look at the light blue, which is the foreign or the joint venture company, it's what come out is it's pretty flat. You know, for the last since 2007, there's not a lot of changes of the foreign companies. Okay, and so you know, some of you who involved with the China market, you will probably say that even after the WTO, foreign companies can go to China, but still they are restricted. You know, there are still, you know, gates, you know, for you to meet before you can go on. So one example is that if you were a domestic company, you could probably get licensing, maybe 10 licenses, 15 licenses in a year. Okay. So when I say licenses, when company operate in a city, let's say in Guangzhou, or you have to get a license, right? So for domestic company, you can get 5, 10, 15 licenses. Depends on the management. Right? But for foreign companies, you can only get one license per year. It used to be. Okay, that's why foreign companies, you know, the growth of them is very slow. Okay. And so basically for foreign companies, it's about 27, 28. It hasn't changed that much. But you can still see the domestic companies growing. I think in China, there's still a mentality, someone, you know, who have not been involved in insurance, they thought going into insurance is a money car, is a money machine. Okay, so there's still a lot of, you know, companies, you know, a lot of entrepreneurship. People want to go into insurance because they think they can make quick money. But they probably learn quicker is not the case. So actually, the competition is in China is pretty competitive. You know, I'm assuming you know, this time. Any questions? Okay, I will just move on. Ben, you want to make some comments?
No, I was just going to say if you have a question, I'll look for you to bring the microphone to Blake.
Okay, thank you.
I do know that the exam takers, the number of exam takers in Malaysia, Indonesia, Singapore, Hong Kong, has increased dramatically in the last several years. In terms of the people who entered the profession 25 years ago, I don't have a good answer at this point. I could look for that offline, but I do know that anytime you have a change in an environment, it can be kind of driven top-down or it can be driven bottom-up. And in this case, I do know that a large number of people in Malaysia are writing exams of the SOA on the heels of a single person who has become kind of an emissary of sorts in Malaysia. Dr. Ken Saint Tan at the University of Waterloo is originally from Malaysia. He makes regular annual trips to Malaysia, recruits students, some for the University of Waterloo, some for local universities where he's involved in the summer times. And we've seen a dramatic increase in candidates, the number of candidates in Malaysia. And I think a large portion of it is driven by a single person becoming an emissary for the profession as well as for the SOA exam.
So does the SOA have affiliations?
Yes, there are some partnerships.
I have to confess, I am an ASA, but I'm an FCAS, so I switched over.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, and I'm not the subject matter expert, but I do know that, for instance, the Nankai University in China is celebrating a 30th anniversary of affiliation with the SOA. Actually, Dr. Harry Panger, a Canadian who's well-known in the profession, and a retired professor at the University of Waterloo is going in July to that event to represent the SOA on behalf of the profession. So you asked a great question. I'm not sure if I've answered it appropriately, but I certainly know the people to pursue. If I was really Anne, I would be giving you a really good answer. Because Anne is highly, you mentioned having lived in that area for a long time. Anne is headquartered in Chicago, but she lived as a tour guide in China for 6 or 7 years, became somewhat fluent in Mandarin,
and she's been involved in the insurance industry as well as government lobbying organizations. And she's a really great and appropriate person for the role she's in. She could give you the right answer. Okay. So maybe talk to me after, and I'll come.
I think August is trying to get the mic back.
Yeah.
Well, so. I'm just trying to respond to your question. Actually, you raised a very good question in terms of what SOA have done for Southeast Asia countries, right? In fact, Ben mentioned in Hong Kong, we do have a SOA staff, full-time staff, waiting. And actually should be visiting universities, I think to start with China and Taiwan, but now the mandate will be going into Malaysia, Indonesia, things like this. So in fact, Ben alluded to, there's a big project in Indonesia that SOE is working together with University of Waterloo and the government in Indonesia, try to get the actual profession up and running. So you're quite right, I think SOE probably in the past did not spend much time about Southeast Asia. Actually, as we have spent a lot of time in China, because this is where the growth is coming from, and as we have seen already, right?
I'm sort of more interested, did the UK Institute sort of get into those areas, into Singapore, into Malaysia?
Well, the UK actually, their profession is doing a very good job. We should really give credit to the UK Institute, So, in fact, we are talking about SOA, but I should be fair to, to the institute. They actually also have a full-time staff in Singapore, So I think we are competing in that, try to get more students to exam, but we are also trying to work together. So some of you might have heard about this CAA, the Certified Actuary Analyst, right? That is working on this predictive analytics. Actually, SOA is a partnership with the UK. I think some of you might know that last year in the October board meeting, we invited the president of the UK Institute to talk to SOA. And then we signed an MOU. We are working together with the UK Institute. So this is part of the collaboration, with the other international associations. Thank you. Okay, so moving on to it's 9:45. I don't know how many of you want to stay up late, so I'm going to speed up. Okay, basically, I think this slide just talked about that in China, you have the same products as what we have in here. Whole life, critical illness, endowment, wealth management. I would probably say that critical illness in China is probably more advanced than Canada, because they have like 30, 35, 40 disease covering the critical illness. Okay. On the other hand, the insurance coverage is not as, most of the insurance is still endowment, like 3 years short-term saving product as opposed to term insurance. So there's differences in the market. Recent discussion, this is probably more interesting, the past slide is talking about the history, now you have to read Jason's mind, what she wants to talk about. Okay, so recent discussion, of course, interest rate in Canada has been like 1% at most. China interest rate has been pretty high, but you see that recently it has also come down as well. Okay, so now the interest rate in China is about 3%. All right. So it has an impact to the insurance market. And the market liberalization, I will cover that in the future slide. And then the last one is on the CROSS, which is the new solvency rule. Interesting. Just want to make a comment that in Europe, the solvency tool talk about, I don't know how many years, maybe 10 years, and it's still talking about that. But for China, the CROSS, they only spent 3 years, and then it's not been running away. Interest rate. Just mention that the interest rate now in China for 10 years bond, they have dropped to below 3%. And obviously, they have an impact, not only to the new business, but also to the in-force as well. Okay, and that it also affect the policyholder behavior, what people might want to surrender I will probably skip this one. Low interest rate. Here it is. Everybody knows that when interest rate drop, we set those up. You know, when I wrote my entry exams, there's something called 10 for one rule. The interest rate dropped by 1%, my building goes up 10%. So actually it has an impact to the bottom line of the insurance company because of the drop of interest rate. One thing, actually it happened in China maybe 3-4 years ago. Historically, China regulators, which is the CRC, they are very restrictive on the kind of assets that can be invested, because most of the investment in China has been government bonds and term deposit. But for the last 4 or 5 years, they tried to liberalize the investment. Okay, so now companies can buy stocks, they can probably buy some derivatives, So derivative is not heard of in China 10 years ago, but now companies can start to limit it. Okay, they can go into more stock market, more fancy type of assets. Okay, but of course that increase the risk, right? So in fact, I think one of the things you will see that in China is they will liberalize the market. Okay, but to control that, I think the risk management, which is a good quite well with solvency too. Okay, they let the front end to liberalize. Okay, because even in the past, there's a limit on what interest rate company can use for pricing. Okay, like it cannot be more than 2.5%. That was the regulation. Pricing cannot be more than 2.5%. But now they have liberalized it. They said company can use 3-4%. Okay, but then company have to do what we call like a DCAT or scenario testing, to make sure that the solvency is still adequate. So that's a quite a big change in the philosophy of the regulators in China. You think that in OSFI here, we've been doing this for the last 20 years, right? But the China is now trying to move their regulated standard into the international community. Okay, I sort of already touched upon market liberalization already. Okay, C-ROSS, that was a talk a year, 2 years ago. I gave about 1 hour talk, so this will be 1 minute talk about C-ROSS. So basically, it's talk about, it started in about 2012, so let's say it's 5 years ago, and I mentioned that in 3 years' time, actually, China, when they do the C-ROSS, they do a lot of comparison. They look at the solvency tool, look at the Canadian, DCAT, the DST, and other solvency rules, and then they come up with what's called Made in China, C-ROSS. And the reason they do that is because China is still an emerging market. They don't think the solvency tool can apply to China. Because first of all, there's no statistics to do the stochastic modeling. And companies are not sophisticated to do the whole modeling, right? And the regulators probably don't understand it. So if companies file a solvency tool version, the regulators in China just blank. What did you do? So they sort of, before the C-ROSS, China was using the Solvency One, which is a factors approach, which is totally out of it. So under the C-ROSS, it's still a factor approach, but it's more sophisticated. Okay, it's almost like the Canadian MCCSR. Thinking about this word, I almost forget. Okay, so the C-ROSS has been already implemented for effective 2016. I think they have 1 year. On a trial basis, 2015, that was the year I left Shanghai. All right, but I guess it's not fully implemented. So with that, I think I want to thank Wesley Chu. I think he's the one to prepare this slide for us. And any questions?
Actually, just to prepare the slide, she consulted with Wesley to go over the view and add some content to it. Yeah.
So thank you very much for your attention. So I'm sure I've been looking at this one as this
one. Any other questions before we take this part? Maybe the grand card is there? Okay, I'm going to turn it back over to Fiona.